Innovation Minds presents At the Edge, a podcast about using innovation to empower and drive engagement. The nature of work has changed. Companies around the world are struggling to find the right balance in the new work-from-home hybrid paradigm. As much of the workforce begins to go back to the office after more than a year working remotely, how can leaders keep their employees engaged and collaborating successfully? In this podcast, we interview thought leaders from business and hear their stories and viewpoints on how to use innovation to engage the workforce, as well as how to innovate engagement.
Could you imagine a place where you could go to work every day and you felt like you were really living? That's what they're looking for. And we are in a world right now where people have options. And if as an employer, you're the stick in the mud, you're the guy that's like, nah, get over it. I give you a job. I give you a paycheck. Do your job. Then have fun enjoying the revolving door of turnover in your company. Because there are too many organizations now that are learning to adapt. They're learning to get to the part about their people. And they're seeing the investment that when they grow humans, not just employees, it changes everything.
Today we're here with Clint Pulver. He's an Emmy Award-winning motivational keynote speaker, author, and workforce expert, the founder of the Institute for Employer Retention, and the twist is, he's also been a professional drummer for more than 20 years. And while that's not why he's here, his history as a drummer is an important part of his story about engaging the workforce on a human level. He's also the author of a new book that I just finished reading called I Love It Here, How Great Leaders Create Organizations Their People Never Want to Leave. He's also known as the Undercover Millennial, a title he'll explain to us shortly. Clint, welcome to At the Edge.
I appreciate you having me on the show. This is an honor. Thank you for doing this, and I never take it for granted. I grew up in Heber City, Utah, in a small little town. I was the kid that always had a hard time sitting still. I would move all the time. I would fidget, and I tapped a lot. And everybody obviously saw that as a problem and as an annoyance. And it took one teacher in my life who actually saw it as an opportunity. And he saw me tapping. He told me to stay after class. And I thought I was in trouble, and I thought I was going to get kicked out of school. And I was always on the list. And he sat me down, and he said, listen, I've been watching you, and I know all the other teachers talk about you, and you are a little bit of a problem. You get called that a lot because you tap in my class and you tap in everybody else's class. He said, but it's crazy. You'll sit there and you'll take a pen and you'll start writing with your right hand, and then you'll tap with your left hand, and then you can switch the pen, and you'll start writing with your left hand and you'll tap with your right hand. And he said, I think you're ambidextrous. And I was like, no, I'm Presbyterian. He's like, no, that's not what it means. No, no, no. He said, can you tap your head and rub your belly? And I gave it a go and I could do it. And he said, can you switch it? And back and forth without even thinking about it, I could do it. And he sat back in his chair and he looked at me and he said, I don't think you're a problem. I just think you're a drummer. And those few words changed everything for me. I'm someone that I very, very heavily believe in moments. I believe that moments are what create our lives. I think that's what we remember in life. We don't remember the days, we remember moments. And the better we are at creating moments for ourselves, for our families, for our workplaces, for the people that experience us, the more memorable and influential we become. Because in this moment, Mr. Jensen, the old teacher, he leaned back in his desk and he opened up the top drawer and he reached inside and he took out my very first pair of drumsticks, my very first pair. And I'll never forget, he took the sticks and he handed them to me and he said, Clint, these are for you. And I need you to promise me one thing. Just promise me that you'll keep them in your hands as much as you can.
Now, because I've read your book, I understand the connection between that beautiful personal story and making employees happy. So for those that haven't yet read your book, could you maybe talk a little bit about that and that connection?
Yeah, absolutely. So 5 years ago, I was a part of a mastermind group. We were in New York City and we were meeting with other CEOs, executives, and learning about their business strategy and what was working and what wasn't working. And one of the gentlemen we met with owned a large sporting goods retail store in Manhattan. And we're sitting there and we're talking about his business and his strategy and how they've had to change and pivot over the years. And I'll never forget, in his thick New York accent, he said, "You got to adapt or you're going to die. If you don't adapt in business, you're going to die." I was like, wow, that's very profound. And then I asked him, just out of curiosity, he kind of turned it over to Q&A time. And I said, "I've got a question. What about your management style? You know, what about people? Have you felt the need to adapt and change to meet their needs over the years?" And he said, "No, no need to change." He said, "What I do today is the same thing I did 20 years ago, and we get results." Another fairly profound statement. And I remember thinking, okay, He feels the need to change his business strategy to meet the demands of an ever-changing marketplace. But when it comes to people, there's no need to adapt. And I looked around, and in the store, all of his employees were working, and they were all my age or younger, all millennials, Gen Z. And I just thought, I said, I wonder if they would say the same thing. And so I thanked him for his time. I had literally 35 minutes to kill until we needed to be to the next place. And I was dressed like a regular customer. I wasn't in a suit or a tie. I literally had a backwards hat on and a hoodie. And I just, with the time I had, I walked up to the first employee that I saw. And I said, "Hey, I'm just curious. What's it like to work here?" And the employee got really quiet, started looking around. I felt like we were doing an illegal drug exchange. And he said, "Do you really want to know?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm curious." And he goes, "Man, I can't stand it here." And I said, what do you mean? He goes, "Dude, we're cogs in a wheel, all of us. I literally don't even think my manager's here right now. Or I don't even know if he knows I'm here right now. I don't know, dude, it's just a job." And I thought, okay, well then why are you still working here? And he said, "Oh, I've already applied to 3 other places." And it was really shocking. And I thought, man, okay, well maybe he's just having a bad day. So I went to another employee and asked them the same question. And then another, and another, and another. And at the end of the 35 minutes that I had, I interviewed 6 of his staff members, 6 of the CEO's team. And at the end of those conversations, 5 out of the 6 of his employees said they would not be working for this guy in his store in less than 3.5 months. And that was a big realization for me, a moment that I really came to understand that the perception of leadership versus the reality of the employee experience, a lot of the time could not be further apart. There's sometimes a massive disconnect. And that was the moment I started the Undercover Millennial program. It's kind of like Undercover Boss without the makeup. I am the Undercover Millennial. And the beauty of all of this is that I get real, authentic data. And I've done this for almost 4.5 years now, and we have interviewed over 10,000 employees, and I've worked with 181 organizations. And it has really been a unique perspective because it's something that's never been done before. And I decided to title our new book that just released a month and a half ago. I titled it, "I Love It Here: How Great Leaders Create Organizations Their People Never Want to Leave." And I titled it that because that was really the magic of the research, was when I would go up to an employee and say, "Hey, I'm just curious, what's it like to work here?" And they would respond with, "Oh, I love it here. I love my job. I love what we get to do. I love what we're building. I love my manager. I love, you know, the opportunity we have. It's a great company. You need to apply." And then with that would trend from person to person to person in companies and in organizations. And it was beautiful to see what great leaders were doing to create that type of a response in their people.
I think it would be fair to say, after 4.5 years and 10,000 people, you have a pretty good idea of how to make employees happy at their work.
Yes.
So tell us, what is the secret to making employees happy?
Well, first off, I wouldn't say that there is just one secret. I wouldn't say there is one size fits all approach. I tried to kind of, in the book, really emphasize the importance of an individual. You cannot look at someone based off of their age and say, well, this is the way you're supposed to be, or this is the one secret or the hack that's going to work with every person in every situation. But there are principles. And one principle that was really significant and interesting was the power of mentorship versus management. When an employee hated their job, they talked about the manager. When an employee loved their job, they talked about the mentor. Mentorship was really unique because usually in leadership or in employee engagement, we talk about good leaders. We talk about leadership. And then sometimes we talk about management. Those are two of kind of the variables between, you know, authoritative positions in business. But what I found is this middle section, and it's what I called mentorship. Mentorship is not leadership. Mentorship is not management. Mentorship is mentorship. And it's unique because mentorship has to be earned. You cannot become a mentor for an employee until that employee invites you into their heart. Traditional leadership is about standing in the front of the organization. You're at the helm of the ship. You're the visionary. This is where we're going. I got to get you from point A to point B to point C. You're a leader if people follow you. Management is about efficiency. How do we make sure there's no holes in the ship? How can we get to point A to point B faster and more effective? But mentorship is about taking care of people on the ship. And it's because of really five C's. And I talk about this in the book, the five C's of mentorship. The first C is confidence. The second C is credibility. The third C is competence. The fourth C is candor. And the fifth C is the ability to care. Those five C's, if I found somebody that earned the right to be in that position, to earn the respect of a mentor, of mentorship, they possessed those five C's. And that was really the ultimate combination out of 10,000 employees. And when they talked about these types of individuals, and I asked them why. Why do you listen to them? Why do you stay for them? Why do you work for them? It's because they were a mentor, not a manager. Very powerful.
And it sounds like there's actually a sixth C in there, which is the connect.
Yes. Yeah, well, and I consider that to kind of fall within caring, right? When we really care about an individual and we care on their level. In the book, I wrote about the importance of every employee is asking you the question, let me know when it gets to the part about me. Let me know in your mission statement and your meeting agenda, your schedule, your P&L statement, your quarterly projections. Let me know when that considers my life. And a lot of people in management, they hear that and they go, those entitled little shining stars in my life, right? Like, let me know when it gets to the part about me. And it is not about entitlement. It's about good humanity. It's about bringing humanity back into the workplace. It's about learning to connect with individuals. And then from there, we can ask more. Too many times we look at people like a fireplace and it's literally, you know, I see managers and they look at an employee and they go, give me the heat, then I'll give you wood. Give me heat, give me effort, give me results, show up on time, do your job, then we'll talk recognition. And I saw the ultimate amount of loyalty and influence is when a leader flipped the script and they realized you're here and you're working really hard to make my dreams come true. You're working hard to make sure we're more efficient. You're working really hard to make sure that the store looks clean. You're working really hard to make sure that your family's taken care of. And I need to care about that. I need to flip the script and I need to care about your dreams. And that just is a natural, innate, beautiful relationship building character trait that creates connection. And it's that ability to just care about people and to realize that we got to get to the part about them.
You talked in the book quite a bit about the role of opportunity, praise, recognition, awards, you know, making people feel heard is how I saw it. Making the fact that you're part of a company that's a community.
Absolutely. It's about recognition, but it's also about individualizing the recognition. A lot of times the company will be like, okay, we got our spring summer fling or here's our Christmas party. And those are great things. Those are good things. But most employees never talked about that. They talked about the time when a manager said, hey, listen, I know you and your wife really enjoy theater and you did a great job last month and we just want to show a little bit of love And so I got you tickets for you and your wife to take a date night and to go watch the show. Because I know that's what you love. Or when a manager said, hey, listen, we just appreciate everything that you've been doing. You've gone above and beyond. We've really struggled through COVID. And I know it's been crazy and you've been working a lot of hours. And I know you love to fish, John. I know you're a fisher. And I don't, just to show thank you and a little bit of some gratitude and appreciation, for Mondays and Wednesdays and Fridays, take the day off at 3. Just take it off at 3. We're still going to pay you the same wage and go fishing. That's what they talked about. Those were moments where it was like, man, they recognized me in a way that considered me. They knew me. They understand my family. They understand my life. They understand my lifestyle. They understand my talents, my strengths, my desires, my interests, my hobbies. And when you can recognize a person in that realm, oh man, that beats any Christmas party. That beats any swag bag. That meets any, you know, custom little water bottle that we give to employees a lot. You know, those general things will never be outweighed by the personal significant moments we can create when recognizing a person.
It's really recognizing that each person in the team, in the company, is a human being.
Yes. What a concept, right? It really isn't rocket science. You know, my book is not something that's filled with things that have never been said before, things that are not, you know, you would even think to say common sense. But unfortunately, most organizations never do them. It's wild to me. But the ones that do, massively reap the rewards of an engaged workforce, an empowered workforce. People that are empowered to do more, to see more, to be more, to understand that they don't just love their job, but they actually love who they are while they're at their job. And that always increases more profitability. That always increases higher retention. That always increases more productivity. But we got to start with the people. Obviously, there's the overlying culture, right, where you start with an organization and you go kind of to their mission statement, you go to their values, you go to, you know, the core of the organization. What do they stand for? What do we want people to feel? What do we want people to think? What experience do we want to create for our people? That's going to be different for every organization. Obviously, literally 100% of the time, it's always positive, right? Companies say they want to have a great environment. They want to have a great culture. They want to have happy employees. But it really comes down to the nitty gritty. It comes down to the individuals. It comes down to the moments. It comes down to the experiences. And that is easier said than done. A lot of people, they'll read the book and they go, okay, it's a grand idea, but how do I implement this? And you do it by small, small, small little things done consistently over a long period of time.
When we talk about innovation at the edge, we're talking about innovation being spread throughout the organization, not something that is just done by a small team or just done now and again, like in a hackathon or specific events. Everybody gets the opportunity to contribute to, really everybody, all the time, giving every employee the opportunity to be heard, giving everyone an opportunity to be recognized and rewarded for what they have to contribute. What would you say is the connection between innovation and engagement?
Yeah, when people feel seen, heard, and understood, when people work in an environment where they're safe, but they also feel safe. So much of good engagement comes from good trust, creating an environment where people can actually thrive. They don't just feel like they're surviving. You know, I'm not stressed out. I'm not walking around eggshells. You know, and obviously there are going to be ideas and things that are maybe in left field or they aren't realistic. But I think it's important for leaders to understand that if you can harvest and foster a community, an event, a culture, a meeting where people feel safe to contribute, where people feel safe to think. So I would really try to create an environment where people can be their best and feel their best when they're with you.
Safety is a very important first step.
Yeah, I mean, I look at some of these great companies that are great innovators, and they innovate because they welcome ideas. They're open. How can you have innovation if you're so closed-minded? Right? How can we think outside of the box when we want to keep everybody in the box? It just doesn't work. But when we open that up and we open that to opportunity and people feel safe to play in that space, then I think that's a great foundation for innovative ideas to flourish. I mentioned a story in the book about an organization called Weave that we worked with. And I believe, I echo what Da Vinci said, that simplicity is sometimes the ultimate sophistication. Simplicity is sometimes the greatest way to innovate, to do something different and unique. It's sometimes, simplicity is such a beautiful thing. So this company, Weave, they said, all right, we're struggling with retention. We're struggling with getting everybody aligned. We're struggling with everybody knowing what we are and what we do. And so they simplified everything. They brought all of their core values into three simple words. They said, we are hungry, we're caring, and we're creative. That really represents what we do. That represents who we are. But then they got innovative, because a lot of companies have very simple mission statements. But I found in my research that most employees have no idea what the mission statement is. Like, could not tell me. I don't know. Do your job. Don't get fired. I don't know. They don't know. And again, I do. I believe that if you're facing the right direction, all you have to do is keep walking. But most people have no clue what the direction is. And so they got innovative and they decided to make it memorable. How can we take some simple words and integrate them into the whole of what we do and why we do it? And so they attached each word with a mascot. So the bear was hungry, the gorilla was creative, and the sloth was caring. And everywhere in the office, sloths, gorillas, stuffed animals, pictures, frames, ideas, thoughts, quotes from with a monkey saying, like, it was beautifully done. It was elegant. It was classy, but it was fun and it was memorable. And I'll tell you one thing. I walked into that organization and I said, what do you guys stand for? What's the mission of the company? Every employee said, oh man, we're hungry, creative, and caring. Hashtag sloth.
In short, people are people. They're not just cogs in a machine. And if you treat people like people, they're going to be engaged and want to do a good job.
Yeah. And I think not just treating people as people, but I think also treating people the way that they want to be treated. And I think that a lot of leaders understand that, okay, I'm leading an individual and I've got to get to know them. I've got to understand what makes them tick. How do we create a workplace where they can thrive? Could you imagine a place where you could go to work every day and you felt like you were really living? Some people might think that I'm living in the clouds, but to your people, that's what they want. That's what they're looking for. And we are in a world right now where people have options. And if as an employer, you're the stick in the mud, you're the guy that's like, yeah, get over it. I give you a job. I give you a paycheck. Do your job. Then have fun being a solo entrepreneur. Have fun enjoying the revolving door of turnover in your company. Because there are too many organizations now that are learning to adapt. They're learning to change. They're learning to get to the part about their people. And they're seeing the investment that when they grow humans, not just employees, it changes everything.
It sounds like you're saying also it really starts with a lot of listening.
Absolutely. You've heard that age-old adage of if you feed a man a fish, then you feed him for a day. You've heard that, right? But if you teach a guy to fish, then you can feed him for a lifetime. Every time I hear that story, I say, who said the guy wanted a fish? Who said he wanted a fish? Maybe he wants a steak. The point is if we create those relationships where people can trust us, where people can talk to us, when they can communicate with us, that creates opportunities for us to listen. It creates opportunities for us to get to the part about them, to know what they want, what they value. But most businesses that have employees, the cost of turnover, it's costing your organization thousands of dollars. And there's just sometimes a few things that a company can tweak and change here and there to make a world of a difference. And yes, it will help the bottom line. It will save you thousands of dollars. But could you imagine also creating a better story for your people? Making an environment where people spend so much of their time, where they get to go home and they're more fulfilled. They go home and they're less stressed. They get to be better moms. They're better dads. They're better partners. We raise better families. You become the best for the world.
In the book, you talk about a friend of yours named James Lawrence. Tell us about James and that lesson he brought you and how that also applies to work and business.
Yeah. James Lawrence is known as the Iron Cowboy. This gentleman has done 50 Ironmans in 50 days in 50 states, like full triathlon events. I mean, miles and miles of swimming, 112 miles of biking, 26 miles of running. And he did it every day for 50 days in 50 states. Literally did something that was deemed by the world to be physically impossible, mentally impossible. And he made it possible. And James speaks a lot, and we've shared the stage many times, and he's a dear friend. And everybody always asks, how'd you do it? How did you do the impossible? And he gives the same answer every time. He says, I did small things consistently over a long period of time. Small things consistently over a long period of time allows us to make little efforts a lot. Little by little, a little becomes a lot. The coolest part about leadership is that it matters. The hardest part about leadership is that it matters every day. Consistency is the key. And James understands that extremely well. He is doing right now, as we speak, he is doing what's called the Conquer 100. And he is doing 100 Ironmans in 100 days. And if you were to ask him right now, how are you doing it, James? He'll give you the same response. I'm doing small things consistently over a long period of time. That's how we make the impossible possible.
Is there anything else you'd like to add that we didn't cover?
If you are in a position of management and leadership, just remember your call. Remember the opportunity that you have, that it's not just about delegation and making sure we're more efficient and that we're making a profit. You are developing and advocating for people. You are playing an intricate role in their lives, and if you do it right, you'll never be forgotten. You'll become legendary in your leadership. You'll become legendary in your influence. And I think at the end of our lives, all of us will be surrounded by two things. We'll be surrounded by the woulda, shoulda, couldas, or we'll be surrounded by the do it, did it, done it's. And you have the opportunity to do some really significant things for people, to live a life of significance, not just a life of success.
Thank you again, Clint. Really, really, we appreciate you being here and what you've shared with us. Thank you.
You're very welcome. All my best.
This has been At the Edge, a podcast from Innovation Minds. We look forward to hosting you on our next episode, which you can find through the same channel you got here with today. Please join our LinkedIn group where you can discuss every episode. You can find the link in the show notes. We're really glad you were here, and thank you very much from Innovation Minds.